Going Linux, episode 182, Computer America, number 53. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard coast to coast, around the world, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And welcome into a Tuesday edition of the Computer America show. Now joining us is our resident Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
Doing great, Craig and Ben. Good to hear from you again, and good to be speaking with you again.
And you sound absolutely wonderful, by the way.
I am absolutely wonderful, so that works out well.
That works out well. You sound wonderful. Your connection is wonderful, and everything. So here's what we're going to do. We always do this on our Linux shows. We basically pick – I have Larry pick a topic or subject that we talk about. So I asked Larry to pick a topic, and the topic for this month is – should I do a drum roll? No. How to avoid computer infections and malware. How to avoid computer infections and malware. Well, that's simple. Just run Linux.
That's it, exactly.
I think that's it. Yeah, exactly. It's really simple. So on to the next subject. No. All
right. Short show tonight.
Short show tonight, is exactly. All right. So it's true, is it not, that people who use Linux are so much likely or less likely to run into an infection? Or now, is that because, you know, people who have Macs, they say the same thing. They say, well, you know, we have so few viruses. Some people say, well, that's because there's so few Macs out there, people just don't want to waste time writing viruses. And others say, no, that's not it. It's based on the Unix
operating system. I won't lie. It was a good day to be a Windows user when Mac came out with like their first ever, you know, viral virus, you know, that multiple Mac users were getting. It was a good day, you know, sit here and be like, oh, welcome to the horrible, horrible party that is, you know, malware.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, well, we on Linux haven't felt it yet, so.
So talk to us about it. Yes, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, many people have said that there's no need to run antivirus software on Linux because of two things. First of all, that Linux doesn't allow software to run as an administrator without the user of the computer giving explicit permission for something to do that, whether that's a virus trying to install itself or even installing a program running a program as an administrator.
Hey, Larry, we can take a quick break and then we'll get into it. This is Computer America. Stay with us. Twenty-one minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy is with us. It's our All Linux Show, and we're just getting started. We ran out of time, so again, Larry just started getting into how to avoid computer infections and malware, and why Linux is such a safe operating system.
Yeah, that's what you get for asking me a question right before the break.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, I went, sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Okay, go ahead.
No problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are really two reasons why folks have thought that Linux users shouldn't be running antivirus or don't need to run antivirus. Shouldn't is probably not the right word, but don't need to. And those same reasons are very familiar to the Mac users who have gotten infected as well. First of all, Linux doesn't run software as an administrator without you giving permission. And as I was saying just before the break, that includes when you install software, when you run software as an administrator. And along with installing software goes the viruses and malware trying to install itself. So you would be aware that it's trying to do that because you'd be asked for permission. That, of course, doesn't stop you from clicking OK, but at least you're informed. The second reason why folks have said that they really don't need to run antivirus is that the Linux community can and routinely does respond more quickly than developers of proprietary software like Windows to identify and patch vulnerabilities. So it just gets fixed quicker whenever there's a vulnerability identified. And it doesn't have to be a malware or a virus. It can just be a hole that gets patched, you know, a security hole. So I've thought that you didn't really need to run antivirus as well. But I think it's probably wise to do that on Linux, especially if you are sharing information with Windows users or today Mac users even, because you could pass on a virus to them. And our topic today is how to avoid the whole computer infections and malware issue. And of course, it's kind of trite to say just use Linux, but there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, really. I agree. I mean, I'm not running Linux, but I'm running a Mac. But you know, ask me how much antivirus stuff am I running? You know.
Yeah. So how much antivirus stuff are you running?
Okay.
You'd rather not say.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not running
for
any.
Him to be hacked.
I don't want to make myself a target. How about that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. You don't want to announce on national radio.
Exactly.
You're not
running. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I want to withdraw the question.
Yeah. No, I don't want to make it a challenge. You know, and find myself being hacked.
Yeah.
No. No. Okay.
But one of the things I did.
Awesome. Okay. No.
One of the things I did, though, is I brought some links to some statistics, some articles on the internet from some reputable sources about how risky is it when you run Windows. And some of those sources that I brought links from include Panda Security. Now, these are the folks that develop an antivirus and anti-malware suite of programs. Panda. Probably not one of the better known names, but they do a very good job of assessing the state of malware on various operating systems. And they have a quarterly report that they put out that they call Collective Intelligence on malware. And they've identified that across the globe, an average of 31.63% approximately of computers are currently infected with something, malware, viruses, spyware, something. So that's almost a third of computers on the internet or off the internet are infected in one way or another. What that really means is if you and your spouse, if you're married, are joining two other couples and they use computers for dinner, two of you at the table have infected computers.
Startling.
You know, I just got – when you mentioned Panda Security, I got hungry because I thought of Panda Express, which is a –
Yeah, me too. I always think about
and
that.
And then you mentioned dining, and I go, oh, God, I'd like to go there. Yeah,
that may be why subliminally thought about that analogy as you're describing this.
Yeah, but they really make good Chinese food. I mean, they're in malls everywhere. They're really good. Yeah, getting back to Panda Security. I'm sorry.
Panda Security as opposed to Panda Express.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, as Windows 8 looms pretty soon, Microsoft will be introducing a new version of Windows. And as soon as the brick-and-mortar stores run out of the Windows 7 PCs they have in inventory, the only version of Windows you're going to be able to select is Windows 8, and with the not-so-good press that it's been getting about its user interface and usability and things like that, you might want to avoid getting a new computer with Windows 8 on it for a couple of reasons. First of all, because of the bad press, possibly. But also, do you really want to risk purchasing a computer where you have a 1 in 3 chance of getting infected?
By the way, just I always like to defer to questions in the chat room. Someone asked Dex if Linux is that secure. He says he wants to know why there are Linux antivirus products.
Aha! Prevention.
Prevention, okay.
Yes. There's no forcing people to run antivirus on Linux, but there's also no forcing people not to be stupid.
Okay.
So you can get yourself infected on Linux just the same as you can on Windows or a Mac by allowing malware onto your computer. And, you know, there's no legislating stupidity. So, you know, some people will and I shouldn't say it that way because sometimes it's inadvertent. The good news is that because Linux is open source software, that means that anyone can see the source code. So if you are a programmer, that means you can see how the Linux operating system works. You can look at all of the source code. When you find something that doesn't look quite right, you can fix it. And if you're not a programmer, you can bet that there are hundreds of thousands of people out there that are that will look at the source code and find out that there is a problem and will fix it very quickly. That's the advantage of having open software as opposed to proprietary software like that provided by Microsoft or by Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
So if something bad does go around, it'll be fixed rather quickly.
Exactly right. So, and because it's fixed quickly, easy for me to say, fewer people will get infected in the first place. And that just helps reduce the chances of getting infected at all.
There you go. All right. So we're going to continue on with this. Again, we're talking about the Linux operating system and how to avoid computer infections and malware. And as Larry pointed out, there are Linux antivirus products, but that's just a preventative measure. Make sure that it doesn't happen, you know. And he, I highly suggest that if you want to, you can use it. And they are available for Linux. But again,
well said.
Yeah. Okay. We got to take another break here. We'll continue on with more. This is the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. I was just getting caught up on the chat room since I glanced away for 3 seconds and it's flooded with comments. So there we go. This may not have much to do with like the antivirus part, but I know there is a community around Linux. I'm not asking you to make like a, you know, this big sweeping blanket statement, but do Linux users, you know, generally go back and participate in the community and, you know, they'll let each other know, you know, this virus is go around, you know, download this program, it'll get rid of it, or do most Linux users, you know, just kind of download their distribution and go on their merry way?
Well, some of the users of Linux, many of the users of Linux are programmers or are developers of some sort, and some of them are security experts as well. So usually they're the ones who get the early notification of a virus going around or some sort of malware going around, and they're on the lookout for it in the Linux code. And if they get any reports of somebody getting that, they often have it fixed before the average Linux user even knows that there's a problem. And because the Linux updates are pushed as soon as they're finished, not every week or every month, as soon as it's done, it's pushed out to the users of that particular distribution. So Because of that, it gets fixed very, very quickly. And oftentimes in the background, Linux users, average Linux users, as opposed to the developers who are Linux users, average Linux users oftentimes don't even know there was an infection or a security hole until they read it on a blog somewhere, or if they subscribe to the news for their distribution. You know, there are feeds of security news and things like that, and various blogs on security that you could subscribe to that describe this new security hole in Adobe software affects Windows, Mac, and Linux. Linux has it patched, and Microsoft's still working out a fix. You know,
it's hard to believe that Adobe would have a hole in it. I mean, I get an update for that every 2 hours. So.
I know. It's
you think
rare.
They patch? No, but that's great. That it's good to have, you know, especially in your corner, to have the programmers and the security experts, you know, who are really probably going for the developer, you know, kit and really digging through it before you even touch it. So that's, I guess, another great thing about Linux. You know, you don't you have a lot of good guys on your side.
That's exactly right, and that's really the point of the whole topic here, is that you have a way out. If you really want to avoid getting malware, viruses, spyware, Trojans, all those nasty bugs that go around the internet, use Linux. One of the articles that I linked to from the show notes is one that I wrote on the Going Linux website. The subject of it is antivirus on Linux, but I've incorporated some graphics related to the Panda Security quarterly report on there as well. And what it shows is, if you take a look at the pie charts that I have there, it graphically illustrates very dramatically the difference between the number of Windows, the number of Mac, and the number of Linux computers that might be infected. And, you know, I had to add a little bit of segment in there for Linux, because in theory, although there aren't any in the wild, in theory there are viruses out there for Linux. So I added a little red segment to the pie chart. But if you scroll down even further on that page, you'll see another set of pie charts that really is the same set, except now they're proportional to the number of computers running each of the three operating systems, Windows, Mac, and Linux. And you can see that if you total up all of the Macs and all of the Linux computers, they are fewer than the number of infected Windows computers that are out
by
there.
A lot.
This is some statistics combining the Panda Security Report with a market share report from netmarketshare.com.
I mean, it Windows looks like Pac-Man. Mac looks like the little, you know, little white dots that Pac-Man eats, and Linux looks like the crumbs are left over from the little white dot.
There you go. Yeah, exactly right. And just proportionally, Windows has currently about 92% of the computer market share out there. Mac has 7%, and Linux has 1%. And of that 1%, there are zero, essentially, infections out there in the wild, active infections for Linux. So if you really want to avoid malware, the next computer you get should be either a Mac or Linux. And if you want, you know, with Mac's recent history, if you want something that hasn't gotten viruses, Linux would be the choice. Mac would be second choice, I think, because although there were 600,000 Macs last count infected by that flashback Trojan, I think most of them have been cleaned up. I don't think that Mac users would stand for having Trojan software on their computers.
No, I don't think so. But so basically, the infection is so insignificant that it doesn't even mention Linux computers.
Yeah, that's in the Panda security thing. They don't even mention Linux. They mention the Macs, the 600,000 Macs, and they mention that in the U.S. 30% of computers are infected. Not the 33% or the 31%, 32% that's the average worldwide, but in the U.S. We're not even the country with the largest number of infections. We're certainly not the one with the smallest either. Yeah. But if you look at that survey in detail, it will show you that the country that has the largest proportion of computers with infections currently is South Korea, with 57.3% wow. of the computers in South Korea are infected with something.
I can believe that.
Over half. And the second place country, well, I don't know if it's really second place. Looking at their statistics, they say they're listing members of the OECD, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, whatever that is. So the countries that are members of that, the second place loser, I guess, would be Turkey with 39%. So second place is not nearly as bad as first place. In terms of number of infections, and the U.S. is somewhere down the list, about 2, 4, 6, about 8th.
But Canada still beats us.
Oh. Yeah, Canada just under 25%.
Wow. By the way, Annoyance, who's in the chat room, that's his username, asked a good question. He wants to know, what happens if you're running Windows in a virtual machine on a Linux computer and that version of Windows gets infected? Are you in any danger?
Well, your virtual machine is in danger because it's infected. And, of course, it's a virtual computer, so you can install anti-malware software, antivirus software on that virtual machine and run it just as you would your real hardware machine and clean it up that way. Or, because it's a virtual machine, if you've backed up the image, just blow the infected one away and restore it from a backup. Much easier to do than on a real hard drive on a hardware computer. But you'd be infected, and it's not going to cross over onto your Linux machine, assuming that that's where you're running running the virtual machine. But even if you're running the virtual machine running Windows on a Windows machine, the host Windows machine is not at risk from getting infection from that virtual machine unless you're sharing folders between the two. And of course, if you're sharing folders, you could be sharing files, and if you're sharing files, you could be sharing infection.
But not
if you use a file, you are therefore your computer is being with every computer that file's been with that. Do you see where something I'm going like with that. It?
Yeah, we see that. Yeah, exactly.
Heard something like that similar before.
We're talking about human contact, though, not
machine contact. That one, but with files.
Machine contact.
But it's really simple. The logic is simple. If you don't want to get Windows viruses and infections, don't run Windows programs. Don't run software from Microsoft or software that's designed to run on Microsoft operating systems, and you won't get Windows infections.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a little break here, and we're going to continue on. Larry Bushy is with us. It's our All Linux Show, both hours devoted to the subject of Linux. If you have a question, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We will be right back. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and we're winding up the first hour. Coming up in hour two, we're going to do emails, and we actually have an audio voicemail question from one of our listeners that we're going to play as well. But we're finishing up the topic, pretty much how to avoid computer infections and malware, and what you need to do, and and what you can do, and the fact that basically Linux, you're pretty much worry-free. You don't have to worry about that stuff. And again, my experience on a Mac, I use a Mac every single day. You know, you really don't. It's nowhere near the infection rate of Windows. I mean, let's face it, Windows is a wonderful program. Windows 8, they're coming out with it has its own unique anti-malware product built into it. Interesting, we had David Perry from Komodo who said that if you have another antivirus product running when you install Windows 8, you want to turn off either that antivirus product or the Microsoft Security Essentials. You want to turn that off. You know, one or the other. You don't want to stack up antivirus, anti malware products.
They compete with one another.
Yes, you just want one at a time. Matter of fact, he said they could actually literally bring the OS down to its knees. So you want to make sure that you don't do that. But again, with Linux, there are products out there that you can use. But Larry is basically saying, for the most part, you know, you really don't need them. You don't need them. Exactly.
And if you want to avoid infections altogether, don't use Windows. And you can either use a Mac if you want to spend a little bit more money than you would using Linux. You have a little less control over things because Mac has some things locked down that are open with Linux. And you have fewer choices on software and hardware. But the alternative to that, if you're going to upgrade your operating system or going to buy a new computer, put Linux on it. It's less expensive. You have more control and more choices on software.
And one of the things that we really haven't mentioned is that if you have a Mac, you could run Linux on your Mac.
That's it, exactly. Yep. You can dual boot it. You can replace OS X with Linux if you wish. Yeah. And dual boot's a good way to start.
Yeah, but again, this is a native version of Linux. This is not a Windows version. This version of Linux was written for the Macintosh.
Right, exactly. You're not running in a virtual machine.
Nope.
You just install it on there.
Yeah. So you could do that if you want to. I mean, so you're at least you're given a choice. The flip side, of course, if you're using the Apple product and you're using the Apple Mac OS X, yes, there are things that you can't do. There's Terminal, though. It allows you to do some really good things. But bottom line is that when you're using a Mac, pretty much everything works. I mean, because it was designed. It's a closed system, but yes, because of that, the flip side is that everything you're going to run on it is going to work quite well. So
and it's all controlled by Apple, and so they can control how everything works together, and it all works seamlessly for the most part. Yeah. And you don't get that with Windows. You don't get that with Linux.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you've got a lot more choices. If you find something doesn't work for you, you don't like the word processor that comes with it, there are plenty more available for you, community supported, free of charge in the distribution.
It's interesting. How many word processors do you need?
Until you find the one you like.
But you're right. I mean, you have more choices. But then again, there's just not one for the Mac. I just want people to understand that there are quite a number of word processors out there, and from very good companies. But yes, things are also tend to be more expensive on the Mac too. But you know, you get what you pay for.
It's hard to beat free. I mean,
that's true too. You know, look. The point is, you have a choice. You have an option. You can explore many different possibilities. Even if you have a Mac, you can still run Linux on your Mac. So, I think that it doesn't hurt to give Linux a try or give it a look. I do know that Ben's brother, Aaron, uses Linux exclusively now. He doesn't even use Windows anymore. I know Windows, he had a number of – he lost a CD, and instead of having to go out and buy it, he tried Linux, and he absolutely loves it.
It's great. And if you're thinking of trying it and you don't even want to take the step to dual boot or try it from a CD, there are plenty of software applications out there that are designed for Linux that are also cross-platform. So if you want to get used to the kinds of software that you can run on Linux, try Firefox or Chrome Browser or Thunderbird Mail or the LibreOffice Office Suite, or you recognize some of these names?
Exactly.
There's a lot of software that's on Windows and Mac that also is exactly the same, behaves the same way on Linux, and it's a great way to get started. And if you convert yourself over from Microsoft Office to LibreOffice, for example, you can very easily switch over to Linux and use exactly the same software that you're using on the old operating system. And now you're in a comfortable environment. All your applications, you know what the icons look like, you can launch them. Mm-hmm. And all you really need to learn then is where's the menu button? Is it upper left, lower left, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yep. All right. Well, listen, we're coming up to our top of the hour break. And when we continue on, when we come back, we're going to be reading some emails that we receive over the month. And we will read them to you. They address some very interesting questions. Some of the questions are for beginners. Some of them are more advanced. We also have an audio question from one of our listeners, too. So all that will be coming up in hour two of the Computer America Show. This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on with our All Linux Show tonight. Yes, it's the third Tuesday of the month, and we always talk about Linux with our good friend and correspondent Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And a really terrific podcast. You can certainly listen to it. We actually have a link to it at computeramerica.com on our links page. Larry will talk a little bit more about what subjects are coming up next for the Going Linux podcast. Now, in this, we finished our topic, how to avoid computer infections and malware. Pretty much the answer is if you use Linux, you're not going to get infected. So, hello.
That's pretty much. Couldn't figure that one out,
yeah,
could you?
Exactly. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move into the next phase of our Linux program, and that is talk about or read from a variety of emails that we receive over the month that are particularly about Linux. Larry picks out the ones that he likes to read. And before we get to those, do you want to start off with an audio clip, or do you want to do that later?
No, let's do that one first.
Okay.
I think that you know, the Jack Death, who is in the chat,
right? Yeah.
is the person who's provided this audio clip, and in fact, he has a suggestion for somebody who wrote in, and we read their email on last month's Computer America. So let's hear from Jack Death.
All right, let's see how he's doing.
Well, good day, Larry, Tom, Minion. This is your biggest fan from Neenah, Wisconsin, Troy, a.k.a. Jack Death. I was just giving another listen to episode 171, your last Computer America. And, you know, I know I participated in the chat room, but I always like to re-listen to the episodes just in case I miss something. But I remember a discussion you had regarding an email from LoneStar17, who was asking questions about VirtualBox. And in retrospect, it doesn't sound like there was really a direct answer to his question. There was some good information, but I don't think his question ever really got directly answered. I guess it sounded to me like his question was whether or not a single installation of VirtualBox would cover multiple virtual machines, or if he has to install VirtualBox once for each instance of a machine that he wants to run. And also, it sounds like he's having some questions regarding using guest editions and whether or not guest editions can just be installed once and used on multiple machines, or if it must be installed on each machine.
We define what a guest edition was.
Yeah, guest edition is essentially some additional components for VirtualBox to make it do some additional things like go completely full screen or make it so that you can run it seamlessly, which is essentially run the Windows from the guest operating system within the host operating system so that it looks completely seamless.
Okay, let's continue on.
Yep.
Well, the answer to that question is that, yes, one installation of VirtualBox is adequate to install multiple virtual machines into. So essentially, he needs to install one copy of VirtualBox, and then in the management interface, which you referred to as VDI, which isn't Virtual Desktop Interface, it actually stands for Virtual Desktop Infrastructure, is the correct translation for that acronym. But he would be able to install multiple virtual machines into that one installation of VirtualBox. However, yes, he should download the latest version of the guest editions from Oracle, but you need to install guest editions on each new virtual machine that is created. You cannot just install it into VirtualBox and expect them to work on all the new machines that you make in VirtualBox. You need to install guest editions after you've installed the operating system on each new virtual machine. So I hope that helps further clarify his question. And if you guys need anything else, feel free to contact me. Keep up the great work. Good to hear you guys again.
There you go. All right. Well, good.
Yeah, thanks for that. And you make some very good points. And I have to say, you sound a lot different on the audio file than you do on the chat room. So.
Yeah. People never, you know, you've been chatting for
because
years.
The voice in my head, you sound like Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah. So. That's it, you know, that's it. But people never sound like what you expect. Anyway,
exactly.
Right. Anyway, so let's go to this first email from a new listener to the podcast. His name is Ken. And he's looking for some very specialized applications.
Right. And iNet Ken, different Ken, in the chat had mentioned that oftentimes you don't find every piece of software that you're looking for in the Linux repositories. And for new listeners, a repository is like, think of it like an app store for Linux, except the store part of it, everything's free in the store. So, you know, this email kind of exemplifies what we're talking about here. So let me read it. Ken writes, Larry, Tom, I recently subscribed to your Going Linux podcast and find it interesting. I'm a retired aerospace engineer who has computer experience dating back to 1960.
Things have changed, by the way, Ken.
Yeah, just a little. Uh-huh. He says, I do a lot of CAD work, computer automated design is what that stands for, as well as photo editing / managing. I have an old P4 machine on which I have Ubuntu, 2 to 3 years. I think that means he's had it for 2 to 3 years. It's dual booted with Windows XP. Though I'm interested in the concept of Linux, I have found no way, no in capitals, no way to be able to use it as a primary operating system. My primary computer is home built with an AMD Phenom X4 3.1 gigahertz processor with Windows 7 Pro 32-bit and 2 flat monitors. This is where I do my CAD work. And he mentions a CAD program called Ashlar Vellum Graphite and some lesser programs. And my photo work, he says he uses ACDC, not spelled as you would think.
Wow. It's
anyway, moving on. He says, I also have a CNC foam cutting machine. CNC is computer, no, what is it? Something numeric, something. It's a numeric control machine. He says,
numeric control, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Foam cutting machine that is run by a French operating program on Windows XP. I have seen no Linux program which remotely matches the capability of these programs, nor have I been able to wine them. That's run them in wine. If I were only doing Office Suite email, internet browsing type things, Ubuntu would no doubt cover my every need. But as of right now, there is no substitute for Windows. P.S. I hate Apple and their approach to computing. I'm using Windows 7, but will be very slow to migrate to Windows 8. Meanwhile, I'm keeping the Ubuntu computer updated and operating, hoping that someday it can be an OS for everyone. Ken B. Mm-hmm. And so Ken is trying to do something that many new users to Linux, moving over from Windows, using their Windows computer for very specialized purpose, find very frustrating, and that is those specialized programs like the CNC program, like the CAD program, and like this AC/DC program are specifically designed for Windows. There is no comparable program for Linux. Oftentimes, there's no comparable program for Mac either because it's very specialized for running on Windows. I suggested some things to Ken to look at, and he either said he'd already looked at them and discounted them, or he looked at them after I sent him the links, and he said, these really are very similar to the other ones I've looked at and really don't meet the requirements. And if you're using something very specialized on Windows, continue to use Windows. You'll save yourself some frustration. And as Ken himself said, if he's doing what the average computer user is doing, Office Suite, email, internet browsing, Linux would be just fine.
You know, I want to know how Ken really feels about Apple, though.
I don't know. He was a little wobbly on that, wasn't he?
Yeah. I'm going to take a break here, and then we'll continue on, come back with that. Thanks, Ken. Good email. We're going to talk to Joe next, right after this. Twenty-two minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. Larry Bushy continues on with us. We're doing the different emails that we get over the past month, and we just finished with the one from Ken. And now Joe, who was is that the Tennessee computer guy, I'm assuming?
That's the way I would read it.
Okay,
yep.
All right. Has an email for you, so why don't we read his?
Okay, so Joe writes, hi Larry, hi Tom, hi Chief Minion Bill. Tom and Bill are my two co-hosts on the podcast.
Okay.
He says, I love your podcast. It's one of the best out there. After listening to your podcast, I have decided to dip my mind in the world of Linux again. Mm-hmm. I am setting up Linux on an old laptop for now, and I was wondering what you guys thought the best lightweight Linux distros are. I have tested several in a virtual machine on my main desktop, and I decided on Lubuntu for now. Mm-hmm. I would like your thoughts on others to try. My laptop is an old P4 1.7 with 512 megabytes of RAM and a 60 gig hard drive. Everything seems to work good with Lubuntu, but Linux is like ice cream in an ice cream shop. There are so many flavors, and I want to try them all. So any suggestions you might have for my taste would be great. I know Bill, your co-host, likes to try them all, so maybe he might have a good one for me to try next. Oh, and I just today listened to the episode where Bill recommended Open Media Vault and was wondering how he was liking it. Thanks, and keep up the good work, Joe, Tennessee computer guy. P.S. Don't work poor Bill Plum to death. Laugh out loud. Okay. Well, we've been putting Bill to work on switching distributions and giving us some reviews. He's even done an interview with the community leader of Ubuntu, one of the Linux distributions. So he's been working pretty hard. I promise to lighten up on him a little bit, Joe. As to whether or not Bill continues to like Media Vault, Open Media Vault, I don't know. He hasn't mentioned it, but I do know he still uses it, unless he's wiped it out with switching distributions all the time. At any rate, some recommendations on lightweight Linux distributions, and I'm sure our experts in the chat room may disagree with me on some of these, but I really do think that some of these are the best. We have Lubuntu. That's a good choice. That's the one that that he had already tried out and was in the midst of trying. So, Joe, good choice there. It's a lightweight version of Ubuntu. And what makes it lightweight is the window manager. They've replaced Unity, which is the one that comes with Ubuntu, with LXDE. Very lightweight. Another one you might want to try is Linux Mint XFCE, and that, sorry about my phone ringing, we okay. will get that taken care of shortly. There we go. Okay. Linux Mint XFCE is another lightweight. Unlike Lubuntu, though, Linux Mint Maya, which is the latest version of Mint, comes with a full Office suite. That's the LibreOffice Office suite and all the multimedia codecs. Lubuntu doesn't come with either of those, and so you can certainly install them from the repositories, but Linux Mint comes with that pre-installed even on the lightweight version of their distribution. Another that has come to light, come to my attention recently, has been around for a while, is something called Bodhi Linux, B-O-D-H-I. Extremely light, and one of the things that makes it light is a desktop environment called Enlightenment. And just as an aside, I understand that Bodhi is the Sanskrit word for Enlightenment. So that's where the name comes from. And it's also based on Ubuntu, but it uses this very, very lightweight desktop environment, window manager. And it actually is a minimalist distro, they call it. That's because it comes with just enough software to get it running, and then you can install what you want from the repositories.
Yeah. Hey, I want to know who's calling you this late. This is the Computer America Show. We'll continue on with more Linux Email with Larry Bushy. Stay with us. Larry Bushy continues on with us. Our next email is from a gentleman by the name of Gord. Is it Gord?
Yes.
Gord. Huh? I thought it was like Gordo. That was the character from on Blazing Saddles, wasn't it?
Could be. Yeah. But this is a different Gord.
Gord. Okay.
And he has provided a link for Norman, who wrote into our show, into the Going Linux podcast some time ago with video card issues. He wrote in last month, as a matter of fact. And so Gord provides that link. We'll have that in the show notes as well. It's from the askubuntu.com website, where you can ask Ubuntu a lot of questions. And in this link, it provides information on how to fix a black screen. And that's the kind of problem that Norman was having. So Gord follows up the link with this in his email. He said, a lot of systems don't go to black screen, but still have video-related problems, which this page solves. It's really simple to identify what video adapter you have. Just type LSPCI into a terminal. Asking for help without identifying the video adapter cuts down on the chance of getting help by a large percentage, especially with the type of problem Norman has. There's one or more specific, fairly new NVIDIA adapters, which has been a huge source of grief with Ubuntu 12.04 or Mint version 13 or any other distribution with the same kernel. Regards, as always, Gord Campbell from Full Circle Magazine. And
wow.
Full Circle Magazine is a magazine put out by friends of Ubuntu. So it's very focused on Ubuntu related things. And it comes from those folks over at Canonical. And apparently Gord either contributes there or is an employee there or in some way or another is related to them.
Very good. By the way,
so
I would,
we appreciate that.
Yeah, I misspoke. There was no gourd in Blazing Saddles. It was Mongo. I don't know why.
There you go.
There was a Gordo in something. Though.
Yeah, but it was right. Yeah, but Mongo was a character. I guess it was just that. I guess it was just out of my gourd. All right, so
possibly.
I couldn't resist. All right, so that sounds good. But you know, evidently Dominic responded to Norman too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Dominic's response was this: I was in the same boat, and it was the NVIDIA card that was the problem.
Ah.
I don't know what his NVIDIA card was doing on that boat, but whatever. on the boot menus of the install disks, hit Tab or E, depending on the Grub bootloader version, and add no mode set, then launch. Yeah, seems simple enough.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think
it's easy. It's easier when you're in front of a terminal,
I don't
right?
I think so. Yeah.
This allowed me to install multiple distributions. Was testing a lot. On some I have installed on first boot and had to again add the no mod set flag to the boot menu item. And Dominic provides some background on the two systems that he has. He has an AMD 4 CPU with 8 gig of RAM, an NVIDIA 550 Ti, and on his second system, it also uses an NVIDIA 550 Ti. He has an 8-core AMD CPU and 16 gigabytes of RAM on that one. Both of them are pretty hefty machines, I would say. And he says, hope this helps. For interest, I've settled on Netrunner 4.2 on my main system, the 8-core system, and I'm continuing to test on the other system, as this is kind of what it's for. So Dominic is providing some specific suggestions here that read a lot better if you're reading them in an email. So I forwarded those on to Norman so he could try those. Haven't heard back from Norman to see if that actually fixed his problem, but hopefully it has.
There you go. All right. Well, good. You know, and that's nice, the community helping each other. You know, I mean, you find that everywhere. I mean, you find it with Windows and Mac as well. But But, you know, it's nice to see it.
Yeah, and one of the things you'll find with the Linux community is that there are many, many developers of Linux programmers that are provide you with lots of feedback and help. In fact, oftentimes if you're on a forum on the Ubuntu website or the Linux Mint website, and you ask a question, oftentimes it's one of the developers that will provide you an answer. And if you go on to the website for a particular software application and ask a question, sometimes it's the programmer himself that developed a program answering your questions. So it's a tight-knit community, and everybody in the Linux community helps one another, except for the trolls.
Those are everywhere,
they don't help anyone.
Yeah, but they're just a joy to have around.
Well, they are. They're a lot of amusement, that's for sure.
Exactly. We're coming up against a break. We can guess we could start with this next one. It's kind of short. It's from Gus, and he asked the question. Okay.
Gus says, "Dear Larry, Tom, and Bill, I've listened to an early episode on wine and was wondering what you if you could do an episode on your favorite Windows application that you have had success with under wine, as well as horror stories of wine app installs gone horribly wrong."
I thought it was like, I was wondering if you could do an episode on your favorite wine.
Yeah. Well, I can do that. I don't really have any favorite applications I've run on wine, but the ones that I have run fairly well. Horrible installations, I could probably talk about those as well. Sounds like a good episode, Gus. Maybe I can get together with Tom and Bill and we can commit a little bit about our horror stories with wine. Wine, by the way, is a way to run Windows applications in Linux.
Wow. Well, okay. I'll tell you what. We're at the top of the hour, and then we'll come back and continue on with Greg, right? Yep. He has a question for your co-host, Bill. He wants his opinion. We'll come back with that. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy continues on with us. It's all about the subject of Linux. We still have time if you have a call or a question. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. We'll be right back with Larry right after this. Minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. It is our All Linux program. Larry Bushy continues on with us, and we've been talking all about Linux tonight, and in the second hour have been reading some of the emails that Larry gets about Linux. And we're going to read this next one from Greg, who actually directs his email to your co-host and minion, Bill, for his opinion. He wants your minion's opinion. Okay.
Okay, and here's the opinion from the minion. Okay.
Okay.
All right, let's read Greg's email here. He says, "Hi, Larry. Hi, Tom. Hey, Bill. I'm thinking that this is a question for the chief executive minion, since he's the distro hopper of the bunch. I've been playing around with Linux for several years, but typically just get my laptop loaded up and use it. When I hear about some cool changes to a distro, or I just get bored with what I'm running, I load up another distro. I just loaded Linux Mint 13 on my netbook, and it works great. I'm trying to figure which distro to load onto my son's netbook and haven't decided yet." Greg, maybe your son might have a choice.
You know what makes me wonder is that they'll say, you know, I tried this distro. I really love it. It does everything that I wanted to do. Now, what else? What other distro can I try?
When you're a Linux user, you kind of get into that mindset because there's no risk.
But still.
The guy that mentioned that Linux is like an ice cream shop.
Yeah.
You know, you may like vanilla, but why not try chocolate?
You know,
right.
but
maybe this one will be better.
If it's doing everything that you could possibly want and you're happy with it.
But you're looking at it from a Mac point of view, not a Linux point of view.
I know.
That's true. You've got the choice. Take it.
He can always go back.
Continuing on with Greg's email. He says, "But I have come up with a question about the various distros. Can you go over the differences between the major distributions? I don't mean all the current distros, but the distros that all those forks are based on, Red Hat, Slackware, Debian, and maybe Gentoo. For instance, many current distros are based on Red Hat. Red Hat makes use of RPMs for package management, while Debian-based distros make use of the .deb packages. Thanks, Greg." So this may take a little while to talk about the major distribution differences between the distributions, but many of the Linux distributions are based on, well, all of them are based on the same thing, the Linux kernel. And so they're all Linux at heart. But as Greg mentioned, the Red Hat distribution is based on a package management system. Packages, think of that as software packages, so the applications themselves. What Red Hat uses is the Red Hat Package Management System, or RPM for short. And that's Red Hat's way of packaging software together and making it so that it automatically installs on your computer so that you don't, as you did in the 90s, have to compile the software from source code. All those scary things that computer geeks talk about. It just installs, and you use the package manager called RPM for doing that. So that's one of the differences. Debian-based distributions use Debian packages. That's the .deb packages, and there's a package management system for Debian distributions. Some of the other ones that he mentions, Slackware, Gentoo. Slackware and Gentoo have a little bit different way of doing things. They have some automated package installation and package management available, but those two distributions are designed for Linux geeks. And so typically they're designed so that you can compile your own software. And what that really means is When you install software on a Mac, or when you install well, not so much on a Mac. Let me take Windows as an example. When you install software on Windows, it is designed to run on Windows, and it may be designed to run on Windows 98, and you're installing it on Windows 7. It'll still run, but it's not going to run optimally. Same thing with Linux. There are different versions of software designed for different versions of Linux, and it's designed for different hardware as well. Same with the Windows applications. They're designed to run on just about any hardware that's out there. And if you're installing on Linux, Linux packages, using a package manager, you're installing software that's designed to be generally compatible with most hardware. Whereas if you install software by compiling it, what you're actually doing is you're actually building the software so that it exactly matches the hardware that you've got in your computer. It doesn't install drivers you don't need for hardware that you don't have. Mm-hmm. And so it runs more efficiently and more quickly. And it's just more efficient overall. So, you know, Linux geeks like Slackware and like Gentoo distributions of Linux because of those things. So those are really the main differences. The mm-hmm. same software applications are available. Browsers are browsers. Some of the distributions will allow you to install proprietary software very easily, and some will require that you not install proprietary software, that you use free as in freedom as opposed to free as in beer software and stuff that's not proprietary. Sure.
Larry, we got a few moments left here. Why don't you tell us about what's coming up next on the next Going Linux podcast?
Okay. So we have a listener feedback episode where we'll be reading even more email. We get tons and tons of email, answering listener questions, listening to audio, if we get any, from our listeners, and answering those questions as well. So if you have questions, send them to goinglinux@gmail.com. That's our email address.
Excellent. And, of course, you can listen to the Going Linux podcast. Just head over to computeramerica.com, click on our links button, and we have a link to Larry's podcast there as well. Hey, Larry, great show. Always a pleasure having you here on the program, and we look forward to catching you again in September.
Sounds great to me. I'll be here.
All right. We look forward to having you back with us. All right? You take
Thanks.
Care. All right. Good night, Larry.
Good night.
All right.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.